This is the Perth Asian Lawyer Podcast with Raymond Tan. Episode 5, Buying and Selling a Business. The Perth Asian Lawyer Podcast is brought to you by Tan and Tan Lawyers. Find out more about them by visiting www.tanandtanlawyers.com.
Welcome to another podcast from Tan and Tan Lawyers. We have on the other line Jeff Miles, my business doctor. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm going fantastic. Thanks very much for asking, Raymond.
Good. Jeff, following up from our last podcast regarding partnerships, let's see whether you've got any questions or guidance for some of our listeners.
Well, some of the things that have come up over the last couple of years that I've been doing business coaching is when people want to expand their business, they may want to expand it by acquiring something or organic growth. But the main focus of why you'd want to be involving a lawyer is if they decide to make an acquisition or went to buy a business. So around that, what are some of the settlement purchase processes that people go through?
Well, many people don't actually understand what the process is when you buy a business. And it can be quite complicated. And my suggestion is that before you even think about buying a business, go and see a lawyer, spend, you know, an hour with them. It will be well worth your time so that they can go through what the process is. And from there, they can give you warning signs or things that you should be looking out for, which we may be able to discuss tonight.
What would be some of those things they should look out for then?
Well, the first issue before you even go anywhere is to find out what business structure you want to use to buy your business.
What do you mean a structure?
Well, you may decide that you want to use a company to buy the business, or you could be buying it in your own personal name as a sole proprietor or partner with somebody else. These are all issues that needs to be discussed with your lawyers because there are consequences of the entity that is being used when it comes to the settlement.
So why would a person use a buying a business in their own name, or why would a person choose to use a proprietor limited company instead?
Well, very often it's for tax savings. You would find that if the business is going to turn over, say, $500,000, then the tax may be quite substantial, up to 45% if you're using your own personal name. Whereas if you use a company structure, then you may be able to limit it to around 30% of the income that you make. So that's going to be very important, but also you have to consider liability. If you use a company structure, then you're not exposed, or your personal assets are not exposed. So these are all very important issues to consider before you put it down on paper to the seller that you want to buy the business.
So does it even go down to when you're about to sign a contract? Does it matter whose name appears on the contract?
It does, because if you say you put down an offer to say you want to buy it in Jeff Miles' name, let's say the offer has been accepted. You then go and see your accountant, and the accountant says this business is going to make so much money that you will pay a horrid amount of tax. Therefore, we should use a company structure. Now, by virtue of saying that, and the accountant advises you to change the offer, you may be whacked with double stamp duty because the original offer was made in your personal name. You are now changing it into a company buying the business. So the stamp duty office may say that you have on sold from yourself to a company.
Interesting. It's sometimes scary what you're saying, that sometimes people don't know this. Raymond, what about when a person wants to buy the business and they've decided that they want to buy the business, let's say in a company structure? How do they go about if they want to borrow money through the company structure, which is possibly brand new, and they have to come up with director's guarantees? How does someone organise finance for purchasing a business?
Well, most banks are quite familiar with companies or persons using companies to borrow money when they are buying a business or even a house. What they would do is they would then ask the directors of the company to stand as a personal guarantor to make sure that if the company goes belly up, they have at least somebody that they can go after for the company debts. That is the guarantor or a guarantee. So the banks will still lend you the money.
Who's guaranteeing the money that the company is borrowing then?
Most of the time, the banks will say, if you are the owner of the company and you're a director, I want the director to be a guarantor. Now, I often advise my clients who come to see me, husband and wife, who are going to set up a company, and they say, we're going to both be directors of the company. And I always tell them, if you do that, then both of you will most likely be required by the banks to stand as guarantors. And there's no reason why you should put two persons on the liability table.
Is there a choice? Can people have just one director within the company?
Yes, of course. The law allows us to have a one director company nowadays. Not in the past, but nowadays we are allowed to.
So would it be possible then, you've now started getting into areas that are a little bit confusing, would it be possible for a person who's going to buy a business to own a company themselves but have their house in their wife's name, so it's not going to be put at risk?
Yes, that's very possible. That's like what I term bulletproofing your assets. So, for example, if the husband is going to be the one who's going to be doing business, put the company in his name, put him as the director, but leave the wife out. Now, the wife can be a shareholder. And then as far as the personal home is concerned, if you can, buy the house in the wife's name so that the husband has no interest in the house, so that if the company goes up, they just close down the company and nobody can go after the house.
So what sort of cost is involved in setting up a company?
Well, the ASIC charges $400 for the registration, and the lawyer's fees would be maybe $600 to $700. That's about it.
How much was that again?
$600 to $700 plus the $400 paid to the government. And sometimes you can even buy off-the-shelf companies for about $600.
And should you be talking to both a lawyer and your accountant?
Yes, my advice usually is to speak to the accountant first to find out what kind of income the business is going to bring in, how they're going to distribute the profits, because the accountant may also tell you to use a trust structure so that the income is distributed to beneficiaries, therefore reducing the tax payable.
Yep.
So there's a lot to understand even before you step foot into the buyer's or the seller's office to sign the offer to say that you're going to buy over their business.
Well, I'm going to ask you a tricky question now, because I can. And I've got a lawyer on the other end of the phone, so I'm going to. What happens when somebody buys into a company, and that company, let's say that they don't know a lot about what they're doing, and the company has got a pile of debt that they owe trade creditors or people that they just owe money to? Is the buyer buying actually the debt?
Yes, that's a very, very good question. And you won't believe how often I've had clients coming to see me to say that they want to buy a business that's operating through the company and they want to buy the company. Now, there may be so many debts that are unknown, GST that is outstanding, payroll tax that is outstanding, that it is not funny. So their best advice is we buy the business. So the company may be trading as ABC business. We say we want to buy the business. We don't buy the company. It's very seldom that you put an offer to buy a company unless you have done so much due diligence to find out exactly what debts there are. So that's a very good question.
Who would undertake this due diligence?
Well, the process goes this way. You decide that you want to buy a business. You see the lawyer. The lawyer says, okay, have you discussed it with your accountant so that you have your tax structure ready? If that's all done, then we would draft a offer to buy the business. Now, the offer would contain all these terms and conditions, which would be part of our due diligence process. And the due diligence process could include, for example, if you are buying a business that's operating as a franchise, you want your lawyer to be able to have a look at the franchise agreement to make sure that you are happy with the terms. So that's the first step. Getting an offer down and getting the lawyer to write down all the conditions that may be necessary to protect you in case you decide after your due diligence that you do not want to buy this business.
I had one of my clients over in the other side of Australia, on New South Wales side. They were buying a business, and it was unfortunately a bit of a sad thing that happened, where they went and signed the paperwork to buy the business, and it was a retail business in a shopping centre, and unfortunately when they bought it, the owner sold them the tins that made some of their cool drinks and their ice creams. And unfortunately, they didn't actually own the machines.
No, that's very often, yeah.
They were leased to somebody else, and that lease was on a finance deal. And when they sold it, the payment stopped. So the finance company came and started making repossession noises for the equipment, which was like $40,000 or $50,000. And the owners, unfortunately, had to pay the, if they wanted to keep the machine, they had to pay the finance company who were the owners.
Well, that's why if you are going to put an offer to buy a business, see a lawyer so that they can put all the conditions in there. And part of the conditions would be to make sure that the assets are not encumbered. And when you have seen the lawyer to draft this contract, that's not the end of it. After you do your due diligence, the lawyer then has to settle the business, which means that he has to make sure that the business gets physically handed over properly to the buyer and that there are no liabilities outstanding, that the business name is transferred properly to the buyer. So there's quite a bit of work to be done to make sure that you end up with the business properly in your name with no unknown liabilities out there.
What about, from my experience with dealing with some of my clients who once they've bought a business or established themselves in a business, and bear in mind I've been doing this business coaching for a little bit over a decade. One of the things I've seen is that when people go to either sell their business or people go to buy a business, emotions are running high on both sides because the vendor wants to get as much as he possibly can and the purchaser wants to pay as little as she can. So can somebody negotiate some of these prices?
Yes, of course. And take for example, a guy like yourself would be in a perfect position because you're unemotional about the whole transaction to go and negotiate on behalf of the buyer. So all the buyer needs to do is give some guidelines to say this is how much I'm willing to pay. You go and negotiate as good a deal as possible from the seller and also from the landlord. Now you have to understand most businesses comes with a lease, which means that one of the conditions that we'll put in when we put an offer to buy the business is that it will be subject to the lawyers having a look at the lease terms to make sure that they are acceptable to the buyer. Now very often the lease may be about to end, and hence if an unemotional person like yourself acting as the middleman goes and negotiate with the landlord, you may be able to strike a better deal.
What are some of the other things that people get tripped up on with this buying a business process?
One of the most common issues that arises is a rogue seller who transfers the business to yourself and then goes and set up down the street in competition with yourself.
So, but surely they can't be allowed to do that.
Well, you'll be surprised how often it happens when the contract is not drafted properly. So in most cases, we would make sure that there is a restraint clause preventing the seller from opening up again for a certain period of time.
Hold on. You're going to be buying this business possibly through a real estate agent. Now, I'm not casting anything about real estate agents, but that person's going to be trying to sell the business. Wouldn't they know how to draft the contract?
Unfortunately, the real estate agent is usually acting for the seller. His commission is paid by the seller. He's in no, he's not interested in protecting you, the buyer. He's only interested in protecting the seller.
I can see sharks swimming around me.
Well, they call lawyers sharks. These guys are worse.
Sometimes I think you could be right. What else are some traps and tricks to watch out for?
Well, making sure that the franchise is a good franchise is important. Making sure that the lease has got a good terms and conditions in there is important. You will be surprised how often I have seen clients who say they want to buy this business for $200,000. I have a look at the lease and I find that there is what we call a redevelopment clause. Now, a redevelopment clause means basically that the landlord has the right to ask you to leave with or without giving you compensation, depending on how the lease is drafted. Which means that you may have paid $200,000 for a business. 6 months down the track, the landlord comes and tell you, you have to leave because we're going to redevelop the premises.
They can't do that.
Yes, they can if it's in the lease. Hence, you need to get the lawyer to look at the lease.
But I've seen some of these leases. Some of these leases are like 50 to 100 pages. How am I supposed to read that?
Why, what do you think I'm a speed reader?
At least it's your nightmare and not mine.
That's what we're paid for. We're paid to make sure that when the business goes over to the buyer or the seller, that it's done properly. Now, we're only talking some right now about buying. What about if you're selling a business? There's still a lot of things to be aware of before to make sure that you sell it and transfer it properly.
What could go wrong there?
Well, you need to make sure that the lease is transferred properly over to the buyer, because if it's not transferred properly and the landlord has a problem, he may come after you as the previous owner because you have not properly transferred the lease and liabilities over to the new buyer.
Is that where they come up with a term called a signing of leases?
Yes. So in the usual course, when you sell the business, you assign your rights and liability in the lease to the buyer. I've had cases where settlement goes through and the lease is actually not transferred over to the buyer, and the buyer just continues to pay rental. And then when there's a problem with the business, the buyer just walks away. And the landlord will then go back to the seller and say, you have not transferred the lease properly. You are still responsible under the lease.
This is I can see just landmines almost everywhere.
Yeah.
So how often when people are buying businesses or businesses, how often do things go wrong?
Very often, because from the word go, if the offer is not drafted properly, you have no way out if you check before you buy the business and then you find that there's a problem. You can't get out.
Can't you go back to the real estate agent and say, look, I made a mistake?
No, it's too late. So one of the first clauses that we will put in is that it will be subject to us looking through the accounts of the business. So very often you have a seller saying the business is worth so much and I have a turnover of $500,000 to $1 million, and then when you go down and have a look at it, they don't actually turn around that kind of money. So what are you paying for?
Well, it doesn't sound like you're paying for much. What would you do when you find that out? How do you get out of the contract?
If your contract is drafted properly, then we would usually say that if it doesn't come up to scratch, then we have the right to get out. Now, another issue that happens very often, especially if you're buying a restaurant, is the liquor license. That's a horror by itself, because the Liquor Licensing Board of WA is famous for delaying transactions or approval of transfers. So you need to make sure that the liquor license is properly transferred over before you hand over your purchase money.
Well, who holds the purchase money? If you make a deposit?
The deposit is usually held by the real estate agent or the business agent who's selling the business. And at settlement, what would happen is by the time your lawyer has gone through all the due diligence and confirmed that everything is okay to settle, there will be a settlement date where everything is transferred over. There's a form to ensure that the business is transferred over to the buyer. All accounts for any liabilities are actually written down and calculated so that it's apportioned. For example, the lease, if it's for 12 months and there's 6 months left, then there's an apportionment of whatever money is owed to the landlord. So these are all done at settlement. And if you don't get a settlement agent to do it properly or a lawyer to do it properly, then you may find that after you have taken over the business, somebody comes knocking at the door like your client of yours, and they say that this equipment still belongs to us.
What happens when a business might have some stock involved?
Well, we usually make sure that an independent valuer do a stock take at settlement so that everybody is happy.
Are there people that actually do this thing called stock taking?
Yes, yes, yes. Especially stock taker. I can't imagine myself doing a job like that, sitting down every day counting cans of Coke or whatever. But there are people who do that.
But you wouldn't only count stock in just retail business. You'd also have it in manufacturing businesses where they might make timber products or steel products, or there'd be lots of areas where stock would be counted.
Yes, that's done every day. Because if you do not take an assessment of the stock, how do you know how much you're paying for?
And do you pay stamp duty based upon the value of the stock?
Yes, the stock and the goodwill is all calculated.
What about if you go in there and you decide that some of the stock may be old or deficient? Do you have to take it?
Well, sometimes your contract will say that if the stock is not acceptable to your standard, then you're not responsible for taking it.
How will the listeners to this here know if the contract's been drafted properly or not? Because otherwise they could end up having to be forced to take a load of useless or redundant stock. How do they know that?
Well, that's why it needs to be drafted properly before you hand it over to the seller to say that that's what you're buying. So all the terms and conditions need to be written down as correctly as possible. And in my standard offers to purchase businesses, we have about an average of 20 to 25 conditions that we usually throw in so that if there's any problems, we can get out.
Okay, well, throw some of these conditions out now. What are some of the conditions that you're talking about? Just name a couple.
Okay, one would be all employees' service contracts are to be terminated by the vendor before settlement. Now, the problem with that is if you take over a business and one of the employees have been working there for the last 7 to 8 years, they are entitled to what they call long service leave.
Yep.
Which means that if he's not been given his leave and you take over, he will, after you take over, come back to you and say, look, I'm entitled to 4 months leave, which is a responsibility of the seller. So when you settle, we want to make sure that the seller terminates the service contract, pays out the employee, so that you're not labeled with the long service leave entitlement of this employee.
Wow.
That can become a very major issue if it's a big company or big business and there's about 40 to 50 workers.
Yeah, you're right. You mentioned that you had 21 of these pearls of wisdom or tips or something. Just give me one more.
One more would be, the sale includes all plant and equipment as detailed in the schedule. Now, it's very important that before you sign up the offer to buy the business, somebody sits down and go through exactly what is included in this sale. Is that beautiful table or that picture frame included in the business? Is that sofa set included in the business? Because if you don't list it out, then you might find that when you go to settlement and you've taken over the business, some of these items that you would regard as essential for the running of the business has disappeared.
How about if a person was buying a business that had vehicles or plant equipment, how would they know if those vehicles are actually owned by the business?
Well, you do a what they call a REV check, Registry of Encumbered Vehicles, and as part of the settlement, your settlement agent or lawyer will go through and make sure that there's no encumbrance on the vehicles.
And you said there's 21 tips to go. You've given me 2. Are you saying that there's 19 more of these minefields to go through?
Yes. Lots of them. Every business that you're buying has a different requirement for due diligence. and it's up to the experience of the lawyer or the settlement agent to make sure that whatever is relevant and important is done properly and recorded as a term of your purchase. And as I said, Jeff, the problem is if you depend on the real estate agent to draft this out for you, he's acting for the seller. He just wants to make sure that the deal goes through. He may throw in one or two conditions for you, and I've seen some horrendous one, right? And he doesn't care. Because the moment you sign and those two conditions are fulfilled, you are stuck with it. You have to buy it.
Even if they're not in your favor?
Yes, even if they're not in your favor.
And you can't get out of it?
No, not if there's no good reason.
Well, what about if I don't want the deal to proceed because I didn't do enough homework and something's gone wrong?
Too bad, mate. You'll be sued. So my suggestion, Jeff, is if any of your clients want to buy a business or sell a business, go ahead and make sure that the contract is vetted properly by the lawyers. Pay a bit of money. It might cost you $300-$400, but it's going to save you a lot of headaches and a lot of money because you want to be protected. And that's the name of the game. Protecting your interests and saving you money. That's the motto of 10 and 10, and we stand by that.
Okay, well, let's see you put your money where your mouth is. You said that there's some things that you've got tips and tricks, and what about if somebody wants to ask you some questions, how about you giving away some free time?
Well, that's part of what we've been doing for over 6-7 years. We have a free email legal advice service, and it's ask@10and10lawyers.com. You just email a quick question to me if you have any, and I usually reply within 24 hours.
Come on, how much do you charge for this?
It's a free email legal advice service. You don't get much free nowadays, Jeff, but it's free.
You don't? I've never heard much free from a lawyer before. You're going to give away free advice in writing?
Yes, in writing. But it's usually, you know, a short answer as to whether we can help you or where you should be looking or what you should be concerning yourself about. But that's usually a very good starting point because you would have, or the person who sends me the email would have sat down and listed out exactly what his concerns are, and I should be able to tell whether he's on the right track or not. And it's all free.
If somebody does that and takes up your generous idea, send you an email. What if they had more questions? Can they then make an appointment to come and see you?
Yes, they can make an appointment to see us, and our usual first consultation is about $150 to $200 for about 40 minutes. And during that time, most of the questions will be answered, and they will know exactly what needs to be done.
And is it possible that you could meet also with the buyer's accountant or something like that? Can they bring him along?
Yes, we do that too. And sometimes it's a very good idea because some accountants, Jeff, unfortunately, they only look at the tax side. They don't look at the liability issues if you go into a business. They just look at tax. How much are you going to save in tax if you do this? How much are you going to save in tax if you do that? But they don't consider if you, for example, decide you want to go and buy the business in your own name and it's a high-risk business and you've got assets of your own, you could be sued personally. So it's a good idea. Get to see a lawyer and an accountant together if you can.
It sounds like it's a great idea. Raymond, you've certainly opened my eyes a little bit more to the perils and pitfalls of buying and even selling a business. It's wonderful that there's resources here at 10 and 10 to be able to contact you.
Well, we try and help our clients, and I'm sure as a business coach, Jeff, you would see the value of what we are suggesting. And I'm sure your clients will be assisted by listening to something like that.
That's great advice. Raymond, if somebody wants to contact you, what's the best email or phone number to contact you on?
Well, they can email me at ray@10and10lawyers.com. Jeff, thank you very much for your time tonight. And I'm sure we'll have another chat about businesses again because that's what we are in. We love our businesses. You love helping other clients improve on their businesses like you have helped mine, and together I'm sure we should be able to provide a very good service to our customers.
I look forward to catching up with you the next time.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Good night.
Thanks, Raymond. Bye-bye. Bye.